Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent. Match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Taking you up to 6:30. We're Grant and Danny. We are brought to you by the law firm Kondori & Murad. They'll help you update your last will and testament, set up a revocable trust for you and your family. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys today, kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them we sent you to get a discount. That's kmlawyers.com. It's a Tuesday show in football season, which means Commander Survivor. Facebook.com/Grant and Danny. There are only four commanders left, and one of them, Jaden Daniels, has immunity from the Titans game, which means you're choosing between three players. Someone's getting immunity. Someone's getting voted off, and it feels pretty easy to say. Terry McLaurin's probably going to be immune, but it's McLaurin, Bobby Wagner, Frankie Louvu, and Jaden Daniels, your final four in Commander Survivor. Coming off two touchdowns and 73 yards, I'm going to go immunity for Terry McLaurin. I think that could be a landslide.
I did that as well because, as you said, Daniels would have been the other guy deserving probably, and he's already immune. So there you have it. He'll be in the final three, and you're voting on somebody else to do that. I gave my vote to Terry McLaurin at Facebook.com/Grant and Danny. I hated voting off who I voted off because all he's done is play really well this year. So I voted Bobby Wagner off the aisle. And this is one of those times where you go, you didn't do anything wrong, but other people did more right. So there you have it. A good showing for Wagner. It's either going to be him or Louvu, I think, that gets voted off this week.
Yeah, I don't think Louvu showed up on the stat sheet this week.
Didn't have much. Had one pass defended, which was a ball they probably should have caught. Would have been an easy play for that interception.
But not a single tackle.
But not a single tackle. Had a couple quarterback hits, and that was it.
And he is maybe the best player on the team circuit to circuit over the course of this season. So go vote Facebook.com/Grant and Danny. Here's the question for you guys, and we'll open up the MGM National Harbor listener lines on this right now. Austin Eckler's on the show in 55 minutes. Looking forward to talking to him at 6 o'clock. Out of the Saints game, another win, percentage chance of making the playoffs go up. They survive and find a way in a game that over the years they lose more often than they win probably.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel better or worse about where they're at as a program? Do you feel more positively or negatively about the season coming out of that Saints game? That's the question at 800-636-1067.
So big picture, of course, we're talking about two separate things. They have the GM right, they have the quarterback right, and the ownership group is good. Or they seem to be so far. So that's the stuff that matters to give them a chance to have a big window to compete. And they got a bunch of salary cap room going forward. And you know, the operation is good. So we're not talking about long term. Just the specifics of this year, where there's nobody else really walking through that door. All the players that they're going to get that are going to help them are either here or in college at this point, right? Or are going to be free agents. So this is who they've got rolling with them. I don't know how you could feel better. I understand they won the game, and that's, you know, the gut check thing, and this is one of those where someone can write, they lose this game in the past. Maybe. Maybe not. I have no idea. It wasn't as if they did something so right and so well that it forced New Orleans to mess up.
Right, the two-point conversion gets caught in the past, I guess, maybe? Is that the point?
Maybe it does, and I'm sure it has at certain points, right? But to me, this is now four of their last five games, even with a bye week included. I want to stress this point. I didn't hear people talking about this much yesterday. I know I didn't focus on it near enough. Out of the bye week, that was what they did. They couldn't run the ball against a terrible run defense, out of the bye week, right? With all the time in the world to rest, recuperate, get right. You've seen all those stats where Mike Tomlin out of the bye week, Andy Reid out of the bye. There's a reason. It's an advantage, right? This is your built-in advantage against a bad opponent starting the third quarterback who got benched in the game, and it took the most puckered ending in the history of puckered endings for you to beat him.
I'll do you one better than that. This was their bye week. The only other time this year where they've kind of had a bye week was the Cowboys game that they lost 34-26. So the two times this season, Danny, where they have had extra time to prepare and really show their merits as a staff and as a, you know, coaches, they've lost to a terrible Dallas team, and they have almost lost to a bad Saints team.
So again, going to it, there's a lot of teams that would lose to Pittsburgh, a lot of teams that would lose to Philadelphia. Teams have been doing that all season long, and those two squads are excellent. A combined, 23 wins maybe at this point. So I understand that, and you were competitive in both, had leads in both, and you know you weren't quite ready for prime time to beat those teams. That's fine. But four of their worst five games this year, not excluding week number one, where that's to me is almost preseason week number four, four of their worst games have come over the last 5 weeks with a bye week sandwiched in between. They're not the same team that was beating the brakes off of inferior opponents a couple of months ago. The outlier in the last 2 months is the Tennessee game, and that was awesome. I had fun.
Is this overstated to say this? You're right. That is the outlier. If I was to say their only really impressive performance since the Carolina game on October 20th is the Titans win, is that overstated?
No, that's correct. Go into that.
Well, I think you could say that the second Giants game was really impressive. They only won by five over New York, 27-22. But I didn't think that game was ever that close.
No, they weren't in danger of losing it, but I don't think you can call that impressive.
Okay, well, if not that one, then I don't think there's such a thing as an impressive game in the second half of this season other than the Titans. Because here's the stretch. They beat the Panthers 40-7. That's when Jaden Daniels got hurt with the rib, and Marcus Mariota finished the game. They played the Bears the next week. They needed the Hail Mary to win that game. By the way, you know Chicago has not won since then?
Yeah, they got Hail Mary'd.
That is crazy.
They're Hail Mary and eight since then.
They got eliminated. Last night by Washington's win, actually, on Sunday, but double eliminated, I guess, if that's a thing, with their loss last night. But anyway, so they beat the Bears on a Hail Mary. They hang on to take out the Giants by five. Again, not a game that was particularly close.
Yeah, they outgame the Giants by 22 yards against a team that's probably going to pick first or second.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I understand it's a divisional game, and I love that they won.
I thought it was a solid win, like a never-a-doubt win, but I won't call it impressive.
Okay.
I'll agree with you.
Yeah.
The Steelers game, they lose by a point, was a fine performance, but they lost, and it was a very winnable game. They collapsed, if you remember. They had a big lead in the second half. So that's not impressive. The Eagles game on the road, I would have said was impressive for three-plus quarters, maybe. It was the opposite of that in the fourth quarter, and they were down considerably, like 26-10 at one point in the fourth quarter, so not impressive. The Cowboys game was not impressive. And are we saying the Saints game was impressive?
That's a no for me.
That's a no for me, dog. So, okay. So they have played 7 games, and we're saying they have played like a really strong, impressive game one time.
You know, again, they're in a place that I'm grateful. I'm so happy. They've exceeded every expectation I had coming into the year. So this basically is an are you capable of spinning multiple plates test. Right. If you are, then you're welcome to the conversation. If not, then you're going to scream and yell, they're 9-5, blah, and like use all caps and maybe that like weird emoji that people use that can't have discussions. So, yes, big picture, of course, I'm thrilled. Right. And as we should be, we're in a spot that I did not think they'd be in. And this is awesome. They have a great chance to go to the postseason in year one of this build, which is outstanding. This year is usually reserved for power washing the old crud, and we know how much crud there was. We've already seen it. First-round picks from the previous regime are not on this roster. Not like, oh, they don't play that much. They're gone. They're vapor trails. They don't have talent in a million spots other than dudes that are readily available on short-term deals as they try to implement the culture and start to build something. And they're here at 9-5 with a great chance to go to the postseason. That's awesome. Put that aside for a second, okay? That's a given. Nobody's arguing against that. Just look at what they're doing on the football field. I keep coming back to the same thing. The outlier is now the Tennessee game. I was hoping after they'd lost three straight, after they'd kind of, you know, they were better than the Giants, but as the great Shaquille O'Neal used to say, whoopee-doo, right? So what? You're better than the Giants. You lose three straight. That Dallas game is your low point of the season. I was hoping the Titans game was the bounce back. I was hoping that was the, we went back in the lab, we're moving Terry around now, we do a bunch of different things on offense, we've found our stride, we're adjusting to the adjustments, watch us beat the crud out of some bad teams. And they didn't do it. They didn't do it. It's not just they escaped with a win, GP. The thing that I cannot get over, can't get past, won't let go, is the simple fact that for the second time in 3 weeks, against an objectively terrible run defense, a team that's predicated on running. That's quite frankly what they're good at. That's their bread and butter. It sets up everything else. They couldn't run the ball effectively. Their running totals were masked by the fact that Jaden Daniels escaped a bunch. The design Jaden Daniels runs, guys, that's zero. That's one. That's very little in the run game. It was his escapes, his scrambles that got the big yardage totals, the couple double digits and the 24-yarder. That was one of the highlights of the game. Their running backs were sub 3 yards per carry. And against a team that cannot stop the run, against everybody else, they are leaky as a sieve. That's full of bullet holes, too. And that wasn't the case. Same with Dallas and now New Orleans as well. That, to me, is the alarm bell going off. So I don't know how you could feel better.
So that's the question. Do you feel better or worse about where they're at, about the season, about this team, this group, after the Saints game? 800-636-1067. I'm actually, it's not like a emphatic or adamant thing where I feel a lot better or like thank God for that game.
Mm-hmm.
But if I have to choose between one of the two on a binary, I feel better. And this is not just a did they win the game though thing, but I feel better for a couple of reasons. Number one, I do think their secondary is in a much better spot. And with my own eyes now, seeing Marshawn Lattimore out there running around, being healthy, seeing what this could look like with him locking down half of a field, I think could be a real difference-making impact addition in their secondary the rest of the way with some teams coming up that can make plays in the passing game,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, you talk about the receiving rooms that we did with Philly and Atlanta. So that's number one. Number two, I love the way they stopped the run. I think that was a really encouraging sign. New Orleans wanted to run the football and couldn't at home. And for them to go on the road and to be able to do that this past week, again, I thought they did a pretty good job in that regard against Tennessee. They did a solid job, not a great job against Dallas. But it's since the Saquon Barkley game, that was kind of my big fear leaving the Philly game as we were waiting in those long lines to get to the trains, if you remember.
I do.
At the link. I was thinking, well, the Titans are going to be able to run the ball on them. You know, the Cowboys, who haven't run it all year, not going to be a problem. But how do they stop Bijan Robinson? How do they stop Saquon Barkley down the stretch? If they have to play Detroit or Philly in the playoffs, they're just going to give up a buck 70 on the ground. Well, I feel a lot better about where they're at right now, stopping the run. And lastly, I will say, I do think that even though it wasn't perfect for Jaden Daniels, Jaden Daniels made some really good throws in that game.
Yes, he did.
Middle of the field, like you know, between hands, small window throws. I thought overall, another game where I feel great about him physically as a runner, that the several weeks where we talked about how injured is he, what's going on, why is he so timid, our team's keeping him in the pocket. It's just glaringly obvious when you watch a game like yesterday that Jaden Daniels was not at the same level of capability and just competence as a runner as he is again right now.
Mm-hmm.
And having that playmaker back, that ability to just touch the five button, as I call it, the I got five on it, and he'll go get me my one in a first down. He'll go get me my 18 on third and 14. I feel good about where they're at in that way. So for all of those reasons, another win, another step closer. They're definitely going to make the playoffs. It's narrow. It's not like an underlined or bolden thing for me, but I do feel better.
It's not Anquan for you?
I also think that it's not Anquan Bold. I also think, Danny, that was kind of a letdown performance, and they still found a way to win. Now, that's very flimsy because basically it was not of their own doing, a two-point conversion where if Rattler sees the wide-open guy in the back of the end zone, they lose. But they played the game that was like, really, you can't play this game badly. And they did, and they still won. Mm-hmm. So I'll chalk it up as a W and keep it moving.
Yeah, there's something to that. I mean, I guess I would say there are absolutely positive developments. Lattimore's the biggest one. I think you hit on that. I think you're dead right. That gives me some hope that things could be better or different. But I've yet to see it. Let me rephrase. We saw the impact potentially against New Orleans. I'd love to see what it looks like this week against Philadelphia, and we'll get the chance to, hopefully. Assuming there's nothing that we don't know about in terms of him not playing or something like that. But to me, that's why you get him, right? Is this division, not only this year, but for the next couple of seasons, you got to deal with A.J. Brown, CeeDee Lamb. You got to deal with Malik Nabers. You're going to have to deal with premier receivers with more than half the teams you play on your schedule pretty much every year, right? When you add up the three NFC East teams and then, you know, beyond, pretty much everybody's got a badass. So that's why you go get a badass cornerback in response. All for that, yes, please. But this, to me, is the whole point. Less so him going back to New Orleans. That's a good story. But they don't have Rashid Shaheed or Chris Olave out there. They got a bunch of Jags. So these coming weeks are where you're going to see it, and it gives me some optimism.
One last point I'll make on why I feel better after Sunday, and that is that I don't think that game was really as close as coming down to the final play. If Daniels hits any of one of three throws to McLaurin, it's closer to a blowout. Let's say they miss all those throws still. If they make that field goal with a minute and a half, right at the two-minute warning.
Right at the two-minute warning.
2 minutes to go. It's a 10-point game. There's no squeaker. That feels so different. You're just walking out, you won by 10, and Rattler having to drop back and get down the field, maybe throws a pick, and it's a kneel down. It's a whole different story coming out of that game. So I think it was kind of fool's gold to pretend like the Saints, and it happened, they almost won, but if the Deami Brown catch doesn't get called back for a penalty, they just kneel the ball out or they go score a touchdown, and they're up two touchdowns late. And there are five or seven or nine different ways where that easily could have happened. And I think people that watched the whole game, the stunning element of it was that, oh my God, the Saints are about to take the lead. That it was shocking because it was a 40-20 time of possession.
Yeah, because Washington was better.
They
same way
their ass all day.
Right, same thing against Chicago. Like, where Washington was clearly better. The numbers say that. The 57 or whatever minutes of game tape said that. But here they were about to lose.
Let's go to Kevin in D.C. on Grant and Danny. What's up, Kevin?
Hey, what's up, guys? I can see you guys at Whole Foods and down in the Navy Yard in the morning.
Oh, right on, dude. What's up?
Nah, I was just calling, right? All I hear is Commander fans critiquing what we're doing wrong. Why not just talk about why not give us kudos to what we're doing right? The best move I seen Sunday was St. Juice on the special teams.
Did you break up? Or are you just gone?
I guess that was it. And scene.
Okay.
Moving St. Juice to special teams. That is a good move. I'm with that. I guess he,
sure.
And I didn't plan regular on defense.
Do that. I mean, he wants to focus on what they did well. I think we went four plus hours yesterday, we went over a lot of things they did well.
Yeah, they stuffed the run incredibly well defensively. It was one big play on a contested catch down the field in terms of the regular pass game that they let up. But I'll take my chances there with two guys in position to make a play on the football. Just so happened neither of them did on that Valdez-Scantling catch down the field. Other than that, that's pretty damn good for a defense. Their third shutout in the first half of the season.
Yeah, they got off the field on 8 of 11 third downs. They gave up less than 250 yards, less than 5 yards per play. All of these things would rank you amongst the best defenses in the league over a full season. Daniels, despite missing a couple of deep shots to McLaurin, had an otherwise very effective, efficient game. I think we've covered most of that for sure. The only thing I will say, too, is to his point, like, there is a magnifying glass, because this is the team that we cover, on when Washington almost loses to the Saints. The Eagles almost lost to the Panthers last week. Let's not forget. Like, it was basically the same deal. It wasn't a two-point conversion. But if Xavier Leggett catches that ball at the one-yard line and rolls into the end zone, that's a touchdown, and the Eagles probably lose to Carolina, who might be the worst team in the NFL. So it's not like teams don't have these second halves where they let teams back in the game or these letdown situations. The problem for Washington is, again, we're talking about one really impressive, full, dominant win in now a 7-week span. And at some point, you just want to start stringing more of those together, which they did in the first half of the season. But the question on the phones right now at 800-636-1067, in the wake of a 2019 win over the Saints, did that game make you feel more positive or negative about the season and where this team is at? And does it make you feel better or worse moving forward toward the playoffs? You're listening to Grant and Danny. G&D on the Fan, taking you up to 6:30. Austin Eckler will be on the show at 6 o'clock for our weekly Tuesday appointment. We'll get his thoughts on the big win against New Orleans. We'll look ahead to Sunday's game with Philadelphia. Eckler right at 6 on the Fan. Question for you guys, did the win over the Saints, a one-point win outscored by 12-0 in the fourth quarter down the stretch, did it make you feel better or worse about where the Commanders are? More or less confident moving forward in this team? 800-636-1067. Let's go to Will in Springfield on the Fan. What's up, Will?
Hey, Will.
What's going on, guys? How you doing, man?
Hey, buddy.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, man.
Grant, I think that we are going to make a push. But what I just wanted to ask you real fast was you guys were talking a little bit about how players were kind of maybe losing a little bit of ground and gaining ground on maybe gaining play and losing play. I just wanted to ask you real fast if it's okay. Deron Payne, he's kind of losing a little bit of – he's kind of losing a little ground on playing defensive tackle, but gaining ground on playing defensive end. And I think he's doing a really good job, which is helping Frankie Louvu on the outside get more sacks. What do you think about that?
Well, they've moved some guys around.
Yeah.
I don't think it's necessarily – I'd have to go back and watch more closely, specific to Payne and end. But they've done a good job, I think, generally moving guys all over the place.
Yeah, Louvu, so passing downs a lot of time, you know, instead of Deron Payne lining up at your traditional, you know, right over the center or one of the guard spots, they move guys around. Maybe you'll have three down linemen and Louvu standing up, or they mix and match a little bit. They don't want you to know where everybody's coming from every time. So, for example, this past week, Deron Payne played 85% of snaps, which is actually a really high total for a defensive tackle. You're usually maybe a little bit less than that, even if you're a stalwart, have a bit more of a rotation. So it kind of speaks to that.
I totally agree, and I would just say that I think the creativity they've shown lately is actually part of why they've been so successful rushing the quarterback. Like Dorrance Armstrong, who had three sacks this season, had 2.5 in this game. One of them got negated by the Benjamin St. Juice penalty, which wasn't really a factor into the sack at all. It's kind of a bailout penalty, to be honest, for New Orleans. But I thought that they like schemed some things up, and I like where they're at in terms of some of the way they're coaching those things. I just don't think they have the pass rushers to be a great pass rushing team. Like, you've seen Dante Fowler at times get on heaters. We've seen a couple of really nice games for Armstrong. Payne has been pretty quiet, but to the caller's point, has been getting a little better and doing some decent things. But the more they can move those guys around, not be predictable, you know, the better off they're going to be. But I think you got to get to a point where you're scheming it, because they don't just have world beaters, you know, world eaters.
Yep.
Guys that are just going to line up and go get 13 sacks in a season. Let's go to Andrew in Warrington. How did Sunday's game make you feel, better or worse?
It made me feel better, and it's to one of Danny's points. It's like, this is year one. Like, normally this would be a lot of just trying to get rid of things. Now we're trying to instead.
Yep.
We're at the point where we get a chance to tweak. We're not like wholesale firing. We it's very obvious we need somebody that can competently replace Biadasz if he ever gets sick again, because that's the reason that we were under three a rush. For our running backs, it's obvious that we're going to need somebody for tight end. Our issues are definable, whereas in the previous administration, it was, we probably need like 17 guys.
Yes, the shoulder shrug with, I don't know, a lot of that going on. Yeah, like it's difference between, you know, who's going to fill in because this person's playing well versus who the hell can play this spot, right? It is night and day from a year ago, without a doubt.
Let's go to Duke in Waldorf on Grant and Danny on the Fan. 1-point win. Danny feels worse about the team right now after the game. I feel a little better thanks to the Lattimore addition, stuff in the run. What about you?
Hey, guys. How are you doing? Love the show.
Appreciate you.
Hey, so Grant, I'm on your side. I feel good about the team. I think I've just watched so much of this team be, it's just different from what we're used to, right? So I'm all in on like the change. And Danny, one question I have for you, and I don't want to attribute this comment to you because I've heard it a few times since the game.
Okay.
But where do you think that people like yourself or just fans in general get this notion that we should be blowing bad teams out? Because we're not known for blowing teams out, right? And we're not, I don't think that in year one with this new regime.
Well, Duke, remember, they did it for the first half of the season.
And so, and that's kind of the point, Duke, is we're checking in, taking the temperature right now. And I appreciate the phone call. So, I mean, to me, you look at the teams, what they were decidedly better than at the time that they played them. You're talking about 28-point wins, you know, 21-point wins, 33-point wins. Now, you're right that that shouldn't be the expectation for 17 weeks, right? Even as Grant pointed out correctly, Philadelphia didn't do that to Carolina. They didn't do that to all these different teams. But what's going on right now on a larger sample is Philadelphia's ripped off 9 straight wins, beaten some of the best teams in the NFL, and looked like one of the legit Super Bowl contenders, as Washington has not played as well over the last 2 months. That's what we're talking about. Since that Carolina game, they have not been the buzzsaw that we saw go 7-2. Some of that's regression. Some of that's normal, right? Again, that's the pace of an NFL season. But my point is, putting that meat thermometer in the bird in the oven, we're taking the temperature right now. 4 of their 5 most recent, you know, under par for them performances have come here lately. And I guess that's kind of my point.
Let's go to the phones. 800-636-1067 is where we find Percy in Raleigh. What's up, Percy?
Hey, guys. Love the show.
Appreciate you.
So my perspective is I believe there's something to be said about learning how to deal with success and learning how to win. And from my perspective, as a whole, I'm happy at where we are moving forward and what the future looks like. But to get to the question about how I feel now, as of the last 5 games, I'm not feeling all that great. And it's simply because I see the team making timely mistakes that are costing us games or either making games closer than they need to be. We got to learn how to, when we get opponent down, to keep our foot on their neck to a certain extent and continue to press on. We can't be getting touchdowns called back. And if you even go back to the Pittsburgh game, we should have won that game, but we made timely mistakes that allow Pittsburgh to take the game from us, in essence. So that's just my thought. I feel good for the future, but right now I don't know if we're ready for the big time. That's kind of where it is.
So I actually think that's a really good point.
Love that, yeah.
I will say that early in the year, I gave Dan Quinn a lot of credit for and heaped a lot of praise on the staff for them playing really disciplined, not having penalties. They were never behind the chains. Mm-hmm. Like that Cincinnati game, I want to say their first penalty was like the fourth quarter. Remember, they had 2 straight weeks where they like weren't penalized or didn't get penalized till the fourth quarter. Remember that?
Yeah, along with the no punt streak.
They had 9 penalties for 84 yards against the Saints. And this is becoming more and more of a problem for them as they have struggled later into the season. That Cowboys game, similarly, was a slop fest where they had 8 penalties for 80 yards. Mm-hmm. And they've come at really big times. And I think that's actually a really smart call and a really good point. Like, enough already. It's so hard to put a game away that when you do everything right and you get the right look and Daniels moves in the pocket and Diami runs the route and goes up the ladder, makes the awesome catch, crashes down to the ground at the 10-yard line, and you're celebrating that moment, to now have to come back because of a hold, demoralizing. Mm-hmm. There were 2 or 3 moments like that in the game where we found out after the fact. The sack for Dorrance Armstrong to end a drive where you go, actually, Benjamin St. Juice got called for a penalty. It's huge. Third down, drive extenders. Those are killers.
100%. But I also love the caller's point about, again, this goes to the big picture. This is invaluable. Your young core, really Jaden Daniels, and then you can add a couple other guys in there that have not gone through this. This is incredibly valuable stuff. You are playing meaningful games in December, win or go home, you know, the winner gets in kind of football games, which you're going to hopefully be doing for some time. And to get that in a year where you should just be cleaning out all the garbage and having a fire sale is awesome, right? Like, these are the kinds of games you're hoping in a realistic, bounce back, rebuild, whatever you want to call it, you're hoping to play next year. They're mirroring what Houston did last season. And I said, that's an unrealistic expectation. That's not fair. C.J. Stroud is lightning in a bottle. And, finding DeMeco Ryans, lightning in a bottle. All the different things that they did to have the kind of season exactly like Washington is having right now, where they got to mess around and win a playoff game, I thought that was unfair to have that as the expectation. Well, guess what? It's happening. And that is excellent and awesome, and I have not lost sight of that. Big picture, I'm doing the Valky Bortakamas dance of joy. In the moment, I'm going, hey, I'm not as bullish about this group's particular future in the near term as I was a month ago.
Yeah, 9-5, first time since 92 is a thing.
It's awesome, yes.
Right? Let's go to Paul, who's in D.C. on Grant and Danny. What's up, Paul?
Hi, this is Paul. Thanks for taking my call. And I feel good about the win. 1 point, end of the game. I've been to a lot of games since 1997. And too often, more than not, come down to the wire like it did the other day, I can look for something to happen where we lose the game. Well, that battle-hardened, battle-tested that Dan Quinn talked about, here it is. And to see the wall go up and keep them out of the end zone at the end of the game to win the game, beautiful for me as a fan. Thanks for taking my call.
Appreciate you, dude.
Buddy. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Austin Eckler at the top of the hour in 20 minutes. One of the big stories today, the Washington game with the Atlanta Falcons has been flexed to primetime for a week from Sunday. That's a week and a half away now. Could end up being a play-in game. Who's going to be the quarterback of the Falcons? Is that a storyline or not? Well, there is a press conference Raheem Morris just had that is interesting. We'll get into that on the Fan. Austin Eckler in 15 minutes. Grant and Danny taking you to 6:30 on the Fan. The Commanders are 9-5. They have not been 9-5 since 1992. And with a win over the Eagles, they will all but officially be on to the playoffs. A little bit of help, they could actually clinch a playoff spot this weekend. They close out the year with the Eagles on Sunday at home, the Falcons the following Sunday at home, and then they're at Dallas for a game that is to be determined in terms of start time on the final Sunday of the season, January 5th. The Falcons game, the penultimate game of the year after Christmas, 12 days from now, December 29th, was flexed to primetime Sunday Night Football. And the reason the league did that, Danny, is because Washington and Atlanta could potentially be playing for the seventh spot in the wild card going into Week 18. If the Commanders lose to the Eagles and the Falcons beat the Giants this week, Atlanta's only one back of Washington, at which point they play the Commanders to pull even with them in the standings with a head-to-head win. Then they'd have the tiebreaker, so they'd leapfrog them with identical, at that time, potentially 9-7 records.
Yeah,
right?
And again, the storylines write themselves. Presumably, now, although Raheem Morris was non-committal as to who the starting quarterback would be going forward, but, you know, TBD there in Atlanta. But Kirk Cousins coming back to Washington, the new boyfriend, so to speak, Jaden Daniels, a star here in his own right in Washington, likely look rookie of the year contender, leading the team to the postseason in his first year. Storylines write themselves, and it's captivating television.
Yeah, so Cousins, to your point, coming back to D.C. with a chance to basically knock the Commanders out of the playoffs, fascinating. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Washington, with a win over Cousins at that point, knocks him out of the playoffs and maybe even out of the starting job, if he's still the guy, and maybe Michael Penix gets the nod the following week. So, like, there is drama there, clearly. But Cousins is in year 13. He has been a starter now for 10 years. He has put up numbers. If you just look at, you know, his success throwing the football over the last decade, you're talking about one of the top five statistical accumulators in the NFL. But it has been a big-time struggle for him at 36 years old this year, coming off of an Achilles. Again yesterday, the Falcons' offense was pretty ugly, and in the second half, it was brutal. He threw an interception on the first play of the second half. It was his lone pick of the game, but it was only 15 pass attempts yesterday, a little over 100 yards. They ran the ball like 2-1 over what they passed. They just weren't calling passing plays.
Yep.
He has an NFL-high 16 interceptions, and he's turning the ball over way too much. There's thought, maybe, that they would go to the rookie Michael Penix. Now, all along, they wanted Cousins to snap out of this slump that he's been in, hasn't been playing well. This is the most he's struggled, frankly, in like 10 years, since 2014, before he became a full-time starter. Raheem Morris has stood by him and every week said he's our starter, he's the guy, he's put the deposits in the league, we know he's going to get right. Well, today he was asked about Cousins, and he said, we have to go through the process, our job is to win as many games as we can this season. Would go on to say, basically, that you know they're going to finish watching the film and make a decision this week. But every other time he's been asked all year,
yeah.
Cousins was the guy, no questions asked. So this is leading to some thought that maybe they could go to Penix against the Giants this weekend, even though they won and beat the Raiders this past week, and even after a win, make a change with three games to go.
One touchdown and nine picks over his last five games. I don't know who this is, honestly.
Crazy.
You know, and it's not as if they're slinging it 50 times a game because they're trailing by double digits and, you know, everything's either garbage time, good, bad, or indifferent. It's they're not throwing it a ton. There are games where they've got a heavy number of attempts, but you're throwing 17 times this past week, 27 times, 24 times. That's not what he's been for a long time. And I know that, you know, a lot of folks here always had an incorrect view of what he was, but, like, if you give him enough dropbacks, he'll put up pretty damn good numbers, and that's not happening right now. I mean, to me, I think it's bad fit. I also think that just he ain't right physically. Whether he'll get right again after that Achilles, I have no idea. But there was a period here in the middle of the year where, oh, you go, okay, he's out of it, right? He's out of that, like, can't push off, doesn't have the same zip on his throws, etc. He's winning the game with his mind. I think he had a 7-touchdown, no pick, couple of weeks back-to-back with a couple division wins.
He's
looked
had
really
huge
good.
Games.
Huge
that's
games.
Crazy is, like, as much as I don't love the fit, he had a 510-yard, 4-touchdown game where he walked off with
a
win in overtime.
Tampa. Yeah,
he had a 300-yard, 4-touchdown game against the Bucs. He had a 300-yard game against the Saints. Like, he's had these monster games, even against the Vikings this past week before this. He threw two picks, one of which was really, really bad. We had Jay on. He said the other one was more on the receiver. But, like, he threw for 350 in that game. But they just... It has been gross offensively.
Yeah,
he has played poorly.
All of it together, yeah. They've fallen off a cliff. They've been terrible to watch offensively. And he's played the worst of his career. Even when he wasn't playing great before he was a full-time starter here, it was, I'm going to risk it. Let's zip it in there. Let's
exactly.
See. YOLO, but I'm going to end up with some pretty big totals, both in terms of yards, touchdowns, and interceptions. This is just no productivity and interceptions. I don't know who that is.
Yeah. And also, you're very young when you're throwing those picks.
Right.
And you can be coached out of him, which he was. Now it's like, what is going on, man? You've gone 10 years avoiding these kind of plays. I could see them making a change because Penix, he is a pocket passer, but he's just more athletic. Cousins, I think he has 4 scrambles out of the pocket all year. Think about that.
Yeah.
4 scrambles. So he's just not moving around a whole lot. But I do think, and I don't know, no one ever wants to hear, especially with Kirk Cousins, like why something's happening. They just want to say, oh, he stinks or whatever. The reason he's struggling, in my opinion, is multifaceted. The fact is he's just not playing well, period. But I watch their games, I watch their offense, and I don't understand what they're doing at all. Their coordinator, Zach Robinson, does not have him under center ever. He is the number one passer in the league over a decade at getting under center, play action, drop back, passing, and slinging the ball middle of the field on in-breakers. You know, you think about all the years over the years, the dig routes and stuff. They don't do that. They don't get under center. They don't go play action. There's no drop back. It's all pistol, standing there. They don't move him at all. There's no bootleg. So he's already fairly immobile after this injury. And now the defense knows exactly where he's going to be at all time because he's in the pistol. It's a terrible fit, the way that they're using him. And it just doesn't make sense. It's like, you have this quarterback.
You went and got him.
You paid him. I didn't tell you to pay him.
Right.
You went and paid him $100 million for some reason. He's done 5 things at an elite level for a long, long time as a passer, and you're asking him to do 0 of those things.
Yeah, it's like
I
Washington did with Josh Norman. It's like you went and got this guy that plays a certain way, and you go, let's never do that again.
Yeah.
Now,
the other part of it is, and this is not on Zach Robinson, he has lost confidence clearly. He's not seeing the field as well. He's forcing balls into windows he normally doesn't. Everyone talks about how great the weapons are. I'm not convinced of that. I think Kyle Pitts, having watched him all year, is one of the most overrated players in the league. And I think Drake London's very solid to good. I actually really like Darnell Mooney. I think he's their best wide receiver, believe it or not. Ray McLeod in the slot is pretty solid as well. So it's a good group. And I think if Penix was in there and you know they could move him around and do some things differently, you know, with his athleticism, you know, maybe it would unleash them a little bit, at least right away. So they may go to him, but they have stood by Cousins because they feel like over many, many years.
Your highest ceiling this year. Yeah,
he's earned it. So I'll be fascinated to see. They beat the Raiders. I would think with Cousins, they would beat the Giants. With Penix, they probably would as well. But it would be a lot more fun if the Falcons are coming here for a primetime game with the playoffs on the line, if Kirko is under center and not Penix, although that would be a pretty cool matchup as well with Daniels and Penix.
A couple of rookies, it'd be good theater. I mean, the backdrop here would be more influential, or, you know, a bigger deal, obviously, with Cousins returning and any narrative that goes with that. But for the primetime national audience, see a couple, you know, top 10 draft picks leading their teams, a potential playoff berth going at it. That's pretty neat, too.
I'd also hate, I just don't know what I don't know about his Achilles and his health. But, like, for him, at 36, if this is maybe his last season, and then you end up the last couple of years, you know, after never having been benched his 10 years as a starter, watching from the sideline, and that's the end of the road. I mean, he's got all kinds of options if he chooses to do that. I don't know. Would he come back next year and just make $55 million to be a backup to Michael Penix? Probably depends on how he feels physically. But you want guys to be able to go out on their own.
For sure.
And so it'd be nice to see him get hot and have a couple, maybe not against Washington, but some decent games to finish out the season and at least feel like if he wanted to step away, it would be on his own terms. But Raheem Morris, non-committal for the first time all season when asked who his starting quarterback's going to be against the Giants. Austin Eckler joins us next on Grant and Danny. We'll look back at the Saints and look ahead to the Eagles here on The Fan.